Good evening and welcome to the Natural Health and Wellness Hour with Sonia. And I want to thank you for joining me this evening. And for those who are listening in for the first time, my name is Sonia Jewell and I'm a natural therapeutic specialist and massage therapist at the Evergreen Spa and Wellness Center right here in Ely. And it is my pleasure to be with you every Wednesday evening during this hour to talk about various health topics, nutrition, and safe and natural alternatives. Some of my listeners have asked me to address today's topic, which is blood sugar imbalances and diabetes. So today, I will be talking about natural alternatives for the treatment of diabetes, as well as simple preventative measures a person can take to avoid this common disease. Now, today, there are at least 20 million diabetics in America, and 6 million of them must take shots of insulin daily. Diabetes is characterized by abnormally high levels of sugar or glucose in the blood, which spills into the urine, causing it to be sweet. In fact, this disease was first described by the Greeks, who called it diabetes mellitus, or honey passing through. It is a condition in which the body is unable to properly metabolize sugar, and the discovery of insulin in the 1920s was called one of medicine's greatest achievements. Now, insulin is a pancreatic hormone needed for the transfer of glucose from the blood to the cells. And when this system fails, when the pancreas does not produce enough insulin, or the insulin cannot get the glucose into the cells, then the sugar level in the blood remains abnormally high. And this is the disease we call diabetes. Now, originally, doctors thought that diabetes was simply a disease of insulin deficiency, a disease in which the pancreas was unable to produce enough insulin to meet the body's demands, and that it could be successfully managed once the right knowledge and technology were in place. Now, over time, researchers have produced better delivery systems for insulin and ways to produce more purified and effective types of insulin. The medical profession has learned that giving insulin orally was unsuccessful and that subcutaneous injections were better and that delivering it through a pump was best. Yet, with all the improvements that have been made since 1920, diabetes remains one of the leading causes of death and disability in the Western world. Complications of diabetes include heart disease and circulation problems, kidney disease, degeneration of the retina leading to blindness, neuropathy resulting in numbness, tingling, pain, and a burning in the extremities, foot ulcers leading to gangrene and high risk of infection. Now, today, doctors realize that diabetes is a much more complicated condition than one of simple insulin deficiency. And they have also discovered that there are two types of diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, which is also called insulin-dependent or childhood diabetes, usually develops before the age of 30 and involves a malfunction of the pancreas. Type 1 diabetes is thought of as an autoimmune disease in which some trigger causes the body's immune system to attack its own insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. Now, in time, the pancreas loses its ability to produce insulin, and blood sugar rises, and very serious adverse consequences, including death, can occur if the person is not supplied with insulin. To this day, there is no common finding as to what the autoimmune trigger for type 1 diabetes might be. And some evidence points to early feeding of pasteurized cow's milk, soy products, and grains, or the use of vaccines as likely triggers. Type 1 diabetes is often difficult to control and, if not successfully controlled, can lead to the early onset of many of the complications I mentioned earlier. Type 1 diabetes is difficult to cure. However, following a good diet can often make possible a reduction in insulin intake by about one-third, as well as reduce the incidence and severity of complications. Now, in the more common kind of diabetes, which would be type 2 diabetes or adult onset diabetes, enough insulin is produced, but its utilization in the cells of the body is simply blocked by the effects of a diet rich in fats. Now, eating refined white sugar and other simple sugars also contributes to diabetes because in excess, these sugars convert to fat in the body. And when a diet based on complex carbs such as unrefined grains and vegetables and legumes is followed for several weeks, approximately 80% of diabetics can stop taking insulin and the remaining 20% can reduce the intake. And the most prominent symptoms of a blood sugar imbalance are excessive thirst and frequent urination. Now that I have explained the two types or two basic patterns of diabetes, let's take a short break with some music. And the CD I chose for today's show is titled Celtic Mystique and is by an artist named Howard Bayer. And I hope you will enjoy this song, and I'll be back shortly with more information on this topic. Welcome back to the Natural Health and Wellness Hour with Sonia. Today's topic is diabetes and blood sugar imbalances. One of the most finely tuned mechanisms of the human body is the regulation of sugar levels in the bloodstream. Now, while the levels of cholesterol and triglycerides can vary widely, the levels of glucose in the blood must be maintained with a narrow range for the body to function at optimum levels, or even to function at all. The regulation of blood sugar levels is carried out by two hormones, insulin and glucagon. And the principal role of insulin is to rapidly remove glucose from the blood and transport it into the muscles, liver, and adipose tissue, and therefore lowering the blood sugar level and feeding the cells. Insulin promotes the storage of glucose as glycogen in the liver and adipose tissues. Now, glucagon has the opposite effect to insulin. In response to low levels of blood sugar, its task is to increase glucose concentration. Now, glucagon acts primarily on the liver and adipose tissue to stimulate the production of glucose from glycogen and raise the blood sugar levels to normal. The ratio of insulin to glucagon in the blood determines whether glucose is used for energy or stored. If insulin is high compared to glucagon, carbohydrates will be created and stored after a meal. If insulin is low compared to glucagon, glucose will be added to the bloodstream rather than stored. Therefore, the type 2 diabetic who produces plenty of insulin that stays in the bloodstream rather than interacts with the cell membrane will tend to gain weight easily. Whereas the type 1 diabetic whose insulin production is low or non-existent will not gain weight no matter how much he or she eats. And I'm quoting the following information out of the book The Fourfold Path of Healing by Dr. Thomas Cowan. And Dr. Cowan is a medical doctor who also had extensive training in homeopathy and nutrition and herbal remedies. And one of his quotes is, "In order to understand the diabetes epidemic in the Western world and why the conventional treatment has almost made no dent in its long-term impact on those who suffer from it, we must understand some basic biochemistry. The control of the blood sugar is one of the most fundamental requirements for a healthy life. Blood sugar levels can become abnormal in one of two ways. They can become too low, which we define as blood sugar less than 80 and call hypoglycemia, or they can become too high, defined as a blood sugar over 110, which is called hyperglycemia. While neither hypo nor hyperglycemia is good for your health, they appear to cause very different reactions in the human body. For example, if your blood sugar level drops below 40, you will become disoriented, confused, and if the situation persists, slip into a coma and die. So this situation is a true medical emergency. When blood sugar is between 40 to 60, you will actually feel shaky and jittery and anxious, sweaty, confused, and irritable. And when blood sugar is between 60 to 80, the same symptoms occur, but they are actually less severe. So the body reacts to the emergency situation of low blood sugar in many ways. When blood sugar even begins to drop below 80, the body produces a number of hormones, primarily adrenaline and glucagon. And the main effect of adrenaline is to make more sugar available to the cells. It is the production of adrenaline that actually accounts for that shaky and jittery feeling that many have experienced during these hypoglycemic episodes. Now, glucagon helps raise blood sugar levels by increasing fat breakdown and stimulates the conversion of fat into sugar. So there may be at least 10 or more hormonal or biochemical reactions that occur during the early stages of hypoglycemia. So as you can see, the body is well prepared to ward off this potential emergency. But the situation is very different when it comes to hyperglycemia. The body gives us little or no warning, but why? Now, Dr. Thomas Cowan quotes that some scientific studies have concluded that the body has a hard time dealing with hyperglycemia because the condition that causes it, mainly overeating and eating too much of the wrong foods, is a relatively new development in human history. On the other hand, hypoglycemia induced by lack of food has been a frequent occurrence to which the body has adapted with a variety of mechanisms. Compared to dozens of hormones that are produced when your blood sugar level drops too low, the body has only two mechanisms to deal with blood sugar that goes too high. And one of them is exercise, because any muscular activity drives the sugar from the blood into the muscle cells where it is used as fuel. The second is the production of insulin. Insulin production is the body's way of saying that the sugar level is too high, that the body is overfed with sugar. So insulin helps remove sugar from the blood into the cells where it is stored as fat. So understanding this basic physiology leads to some interesting conclusions. Now, one is that controlling the level of insulin produced is the key to controlling obesity, because without insulin, there can be no weight gain. So people who lose the ability to make insulin, such in type 1 diabetics, will never gain weight no matter how much food they eat, unless they are supplemented with insulin. In fact, without insulin, they literally starve to death. The second conclusion we can draw is that the cause of type 2 diabetes is actually quite simple. Type 2 diabetes occurs when for many years the consumption of foods that raise the blood sugar chronically exceeds the amount of sugar needed by the muscles for exercise. So this forces the body to gradually make more and more insulin in order to bring this sugar level down. Eventually, the body cannot make enough insulin to lower the sugar level, and the sugar level remains chronically high, and the patient is diagnosed with diabetes. Now, along the way, a curious thing happens called insulin resistance. And this means that as the blood sugars are chronically elevated and the insulin levels are rising, the cells actually build a shield or wall around themselves to slow down this influx of excess sugar. Insulin resistance is a protective response. It is the best the body can do to protect the cells from too much glucose. But as time goes on, the sugar in the blood increases, more insulin is made by the pancreas to deal with this elevated sugar, and the cells resist this sugar influx by becoming insulin resistant, in a sense by shutting the gates. And this leads to the situation in which the blood sugar levels are high, but cellular sugar levels are low. So the body perceives it as low blood sugar. And the patient has low energy and feels hungry, so he or she eats more, and the vicious cycle is underway. Having a chronically elevated insulin level is detrimental for many other reasons. Now, before we continue, let's take a short break again with music from today's feature CD, and I'll be back shortly with more information for you. Thank you. And welcome back to the Natural Health and Wellness Hour. Today's topic is diabetes and blood sugar imbalances, and I was explaining the blood sugar regulating mechanism and insulin resistance. Now, having a chronically elevated insulin level is bad for many reasons. Not only do high insulin levels cause obesity, because insulin tells your body to store fat, but they also signal that fluid should be retained, leading to edema and high blood pressure or hypertension. Chronic high insulin also provokes plaque development inside the arteries and many more physiological responses. Now, during the 1980s, researchers began to ask whether obesity and coronary artery disease, high blood pressure, and many other common medical problems that occur together are really separate diseases. Now, the evidence now points to one defect, and that is excessive insulin levels in the blood, which is the event that links virtually all of our degenerative diseases. So, what causes these excessive insulin levels in our blood? Of course, we know about the three basic food groups: fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. Under normal circumstances, it is the carbohydrates that are transformed into the sugar that goes into the blood. Fats are broken down into fatty acids and become the building blocks for hormones, prostaglandins, and cell membranes. Proteins are broken down into amino acids, which then are rebuilt into the various proteins in our bodies. Carbohydrates are used for one thing only, and that is energy generation. A balanced diet is one where the energy used in movement and exercise equals the energy provided by the carbohydrates we consume. So for a person of a given size, protein and fat requirements are relatively fixed and can be controlled with the appetite. It is actually difficult to overeat fats and proteins because our bodies make us nauseous when we do. However, carbohydrate intake should match our level of activity. The problem of diabetes can be summarized by saying that the Western diet has us eating like marathon runners, when in fact most of us simply sit on the couch. When we regulate the carbohydrate intake to match our activity level, type 2 diabetes cannot develop, and in fact, most cases of type 2 diabetes respond well to this treatment when these basic principles are kept in mind. Type 1 diabetes responds equally well to a high-fat, low-carb diet. In fact, before insulin was available, the only way to treat type 1 diabetes was a high-fat diet from which carbohydrate foods were completely avoided, as the body does not need insulin to assimilate proteins and fats. Unless eaten to great excess, which is hard to do, fats do not contribute to diabetes, with one exception, and that is trans fatty acids in hydrogenated and partially hydrogenated vegetable oils. These can cause insulin resistance. And when these man-made artificial fats get built into the cell membrane, they interfere with the insulin receptors. In theory, this means that one could develop insulin resistance without eating lots of carbohydrates. However, partially hydrogenated vegetable oils are always used in the very high carbohydrate foods, such as French fries, cookies, crackers, donuts, and margarine, bread, or potatoes that flood the bloodstream with sugar. Trans fatty acids in modern processed foods present a double whammy for which we have developed no defenses. So this information is quoted from the book, The Fourfold Path of Healing, by Dr. Thomas Cowan, a medical physician. Now, it's time to take a short break with my music, and I'll be back in a few minutes with information regarding the proper diet for diabetics. Thank you. And welcome back to the Natural Health and Wellness Hour with Sonia. Today's topic is diabetes and blood sugar imbalances, and I have explained in great detail how the blood sugar mechanism works and how important it is for your health. The main cause of type 2 diabetes is the Western diet, which unfortunately is based on refined carbohydrates that rush sugar into the bloodstream, trans fatty acids that interfere with insulin receptors in the cells, and difficult to digest foods such as pasteurized milk and modern soy foods that put a strain on the pancreas. But also another cause of chronic high blood sugar levels, one that is often overlooked, is stress. Now, under stress, the adrenal glands produce adrenaline, which is an important stimulus for the production of glucagon, which raises blood sugar levels and allows the body to react with a fight or flight response. Chronic stress results in constant production of adrenaline, resulting in overstimulation of glycogen to keep blood sugar levels high. And the body then responds with increased production of insulin to bring blood sugar levels down. So it is very important to avoid stress and keep your stress levels under control, may it be through massage therapy, yoga, meditation, or exercise. Now, let's go back to the diet diabetics should follow. Now, Dr. Weston Price, along with many others, conducted studies of native diets and lifestyles. And not only did the so-called primitive peoples follow the perfect anti-diabetes lifestyle program, but the diets included specific foods that were only recently discovered that play an important role in the prevention and treatment of this disease. In general, indigenous peoples had a low carbohydrate intake combined with a lot of physical activity. And there are three other nutritional factors in indigenous diets that are helpful for diabetics. First, the diets were rich in trace minerals. And modern science has shown us that trace mineral deficiencies, particularly deficiencies in zinc and chromium, cause a lot of problems. Chromium is necessary for carbohydrate metabolism and the proper functioning of the insulin receptors. And zinc is a cofactor in the production of insulin. So traditional foods were grown in mineral-rich soils containing mineral-rich bone broth and salt. And we talked about the importance of these broth in previous segments. And also included mineral-rich water or beverages made with such water. Now, in the modern diet, the best sources of zinc are red meats and shellfish, particularly oysters. Extra virgin unfiltered olive oil supplies vanadium, which is also very important, and then chromium is found in nutritional yeast, molasses, and organ meats like liver. Second, indigenous peoples ate a portion of the animal food, such as fish, milk, or meat, uncooked, so either raw or fermented. And this strategy conserves vitamin B6, which is easily destroyed by heat. Vitamin B6 is essential for carbohydrate metabolism. It is one of the most difficult to obtain in the diet. Indigenous peoples intuitively understood the need to eat a portion of the animal foods completely raw. Third, traditional peoples consume foods rich in fat-soluble vitamins, including butterfat from grass-fed animals, organ meats, shellfish, fish liver oils, and the fats of certain animals. High levels of vitamin A are absolutely essential for the diabetic because diabetics are unable to convert the carotenes in plant foods into true vitamin A. Vitamin A and vitamin D also protect against the complications of diabetes, such as retina and kidney problems. And vitamin D is necessary for the production of insulin. So putting all these rules together, we find that a nutrient-dense traditional diet fits all the requirements for the prevention and treatment of diabetes. So the diet should include sufficient trace minerals from organic foods, Celtic sea salt, bone broth, shellfish, grass-fed red meat, unfiltered olive oil, and nutritional yeast. High levels of vitamin A and D are essential as a raw animal foods to provide vitamin B6. Most importantly, diabetics must strictly limit their daily carbohydrate intake. While the optimum amount of carbohydrate foods depends somewhat on your activity levels, most diabetics need to start on a 60 gram per day carbohydrate regimen until their sugars normalize. And there's a wonderful book titled The Schwarzbein Principle, which contains easy-to-use charts that allow you to assess carbohydrate values. So during the initial period of treatment, which can take up to a year, average blood sugar levels should be determined by a blood test. For type 2 diabetics, this diet should help both blood sugar levels and weight to normalize, after which the daily carbohydrate intake can be increased to about 72 grams a day. And this level should be maintained throughout the life of the diabetic. There's also another helpful book I would like to recommend regarding the subject of carbohydrate control, and it is titled Life Without Bread. Now, the same approach applies to type 1 diabetics, although it may not allow him to get off insulin. However, strict carbohydrate restriction should reduce insulin requirements, help keep blood sugar stable, and most importantly, prevent the many side effects associated with diabetes. Also, please note that in this approach, there are no restrictions on total food intake, nor do we pay attention to the so-called glycemic index of various carbohydrate foods. Fats consumed with any carbohydrate food will lower the glycemic index. Worrying about glycemic index adds nothing to the therapy and only increases time spent calculating food values rather than enjoying its goodness. One should eat abundantly from good fats and proteins. Only carbohydrate foods need to be restricted. And with this approach, diabetics can expect greatly improved quality of life and even a complete cure. So all this information was quoted from Dr. Thomas Cowan's book, The Fourfold Path of Healing. And Dr. Cowan is not only a medical doctor, but he's trained also in nutrition, homeopathy, and herbal remedies. And this book is available at the Evergreen Cottage. Now, before I mention nutritional supplements that are very helpful and beneficial for diabetics, let's take a short break with music. And I hope you will enjoy this next song, and I'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Natural Health and Wellness Hour with Sonia. Now, today's topic is diabetes, and I have outlined a diet regimen based on the recommendations by Dr. Thomas Cowan, a medical doctor who also had extensive training in nutrition, homeopathy, and herbal medicine. Now, according to Dr. Cowan, some of the supplements for the diabetics should include cod liver oil at a level that provides 20,000 international units of vitamin A per day, and nutritional yeast for B vitamins and minerals. Another important supplement for the diabetic is evening primrose oil, borage oil, or black currant oil, all of which supply a fatty acid called GLA, which the diabetic cannot make in sufficient quantities to be healthy. And we have all those supplements available at the Evergreen Spa and Wellness Center. Now, as far as herbal therapy, there is one plant that stands out above all others, and that is Gymnema. It has been prescribed for diabetes in Ayurvedic medicine for thousands of years. And this herb is referred to as the sugar buster. In fact, if you chew some leaves of this plant, you eliminate the ability of your taste buds to perceive the sweet taste. So if you eat a piece of candy or even some honey 10 minutes later, it will taste like chalk. Gymnema also helps reduce blood sugar levels. It does this by lowering insulin resistance, much like conventional oral diabetic drugs, and also by increasing the secretion of insulin from the pancreas. Furthermore, Gymnema is currently the only medicine we know of that actually helps regenerate destroyed pancreatic islet cells in type 1 diabetics. The use of Gymnema may not completely reverse type 1 diabetes, but it certainly improves glucose control, and it also helps the body make more insulin if that is what is needed, and it also makes the insulin more effective. Dr. Cowan uses Gymnema for all his diabetic patients, and it never fails to improve the glycemic control. Plus, with Gymnema, there is no risk of provoking the dangerous hypoglycemic reactions so common with the conventional oral diabetic medication. I also have used this herb extensively in my practice with great results. Now, other supplements that are very beneficial include Diaplex, pancreatrophin, and trace minerals by standard process, which are also available at the Evergreen Spa and Wellness Center. And these preparations of organically grown foods contain abundant trace minerals, as well as vitamin B6 from raw animal extracts. If you have any questions about these supplements and how they could benefit your health, please contact me by phone at 365-2288 or stop by to talk to me. If you or any of your loved ones have diabetes, I would like to mention the importance of good foot care, because a primary complication of this disease is foot ulcers. Approximately 25% of individuals with diabetes will develop a foot ulcer. And adults with foot ulcers are 24 times more likely to be hospitalized for limb amputations compared to individuals without diabetes. So doctors should be regularly screening for foot problems with all the diabetes patients, and you must also examine your feet at home, perhaps with the help of someone else. Most of the problems stem from either poor circulation or diabetes-induced nerve problems that result in a loss of sensation. So always begin your foot inspection by checking for dry spots and calluses on the bottom of the foot, where the bones can easily be felt through the skin. And the dryness often indicates a lack of pressure sensation. And if you notice a darker discoloration under the spot or callus, it is an even more obvious sign that there is a bruise or hematoma, which can actually develop into an ulcer. So make sure to thoroughly dry and powder your feet after bathing or whenever they get wet. Wet feet can be a fertile ground for fungal infections, which are almost always difficult to treat. And I also want to suggest that you can treat a fungus-infected nail with neem oil or tea tree oil. And all you do is you use a cotton swab and you apply the oil to the base of the nail where it emerges from the toe and at the end of the toenail. And you should do this daily until the entire infected area has grown out, which may take several months. Also, the use of lotions can be helpful to prevent the formation of cracks or crevices, which, as open wounds, can provide fertile grounds for infections. Also, any cuts or scrapes must be treated quickly. I also highly recommend applying topical dressings using a gauze pad and honey. Every diabetic should have honey on hand as the first-line treatment for ulcerations. It is also important for diabetics to take great care in cutting their toenails. The nails need to be cut straight and filed smooth afterwards. An ingrown toenail needs immediate attention, which is best handled by a podiatrist. A lack of sensation also means you need to be very careful to avoid exposing your feet to excessive heat and even the sun. Instead, use socks to keep your feet warm. So prevention is very important, and if you are diabetic, take the initiative and have your doctor examine your feet at every single visit. Ignoring the initial signs and symptoms of a foot ulcer can quickly turn into a devastating situation. For a diabetic, what looks like a minor problem one day quickly can turn into gangrene and an infected wound requiring amputation 3 days later. Now, before we continue, let's take another break and listen to a track from today's feature CD. And the CD is titled Celtic Mystique. And when I come back, it will almost be time to wrap up today's show. And welcome back to the Natural Health and Wellness Hour with Sonia, and we are about ready to wrap up today's show. And before we do that, let's feature the food of the week. Now, since today's topic was diabetes and blood sugar imbalances, I chose the spice cinnamon as the food of the week. This historic and well-known spice may benefit your cholesterol levels, blood sugar, and much more. The cinnamon you have been sprinkling on your oatmeal or toast is probably cassia, which is a close relative of Ceylon or true cinnamon. Now, both varieties come from the bark of tropical evergreen trees typically found in Asia. Cassia, which is bold and spicy, has long been the American favorite, and the FDA allows it to be sold as cinnamon. Europeans, on the other hand, prefer the more subtle citrusy Ceylon variety. Both continue to deliver a host of benefits for cooking and health. In Ayurvedic and traditional Chinese medicine, both varieties of cinnamon have long served as an appetite stimulant and as a remedy for abdominal pain and gas. Now, the cassia variety, or the cinnamon we are used to here in the United States, may have a powerful effect on blood sugar. In one 2003 study, it lowered the blood sugar of type 2 diabetics up to 29%, an effect that lasted for almost 3 weeks. And it also reduced the testes triglyceride, LDL, and total cholesterol levels, a significant benefit since people with diabetes also suffer from an increased risk of heart disease. But just because a little of the spice boosts your health doesn't mean more is better. Cinnamon, especially the cassia variety or the cinnamon we are used to here, contains roughly 5% coumarin, which can cause liver irritation in sensitive people. So, according to health authorities in Germany, which regulates the cassia usage, We should not eat more than 1/3 of a teaspoon of cinnamon a day for every 100 pounds of body weight. And if you're purchasing cinnamon sticks from the bark of the cassia tree, you should look for a deep, rich, reddish-brown color. It is hard to grind the sticks into powder, so if you need it ground, just buy the powder, which should last or stay fresh for about a year. Now, I also want to mention that cinnamon sticks make flavorful stirring sticks for hot cocoa or malt cider, and if you add them into stews and meat dishes, it adds an exotic flavor. Cinnamon is very warming and perfect for this time of the year. So here are a few recipes I would like to share with you. And the first one is a recipe for a spiced pomegranate sparkler. And this is a great drink that tastes refreshing and also boosts immunity and is perfect for when you feel a cold or flu coming on. And this recipe calls for 1 cup of pomegranate juice, which needs to be heated in a small saucepan just near boiling, and then you add a cinnamon stick and simmer it for 10 minutes. And then you remove the juice from the heat and allow it to cool completely, which should take about an hour. And then you remove the cinnamon stick and you divide the spiced juice between 2 tall glasses. Add 1 cup of sparkling mineral water to each glass. You stir it up, add ice, and serve with a garnish of frozen cranberries. And the cranberries and pomegranates all have antioxidants such as vitamin C that boost your immunity. Now, the next recipe I would like to share with you is for a warm drink, and it is called warm grapefruit tea. Now, grapefruits contain a special compound that can make your insulin more effective. And this recipe calls for 2 cups of ruby red grapefruit juice, preferably freshly squeezed from 2 grapefruits. And in a pot, you combine 2 cups of grapefruit juice, 2 to 4 tablespoons of honey, 1 cinnamon stick, 1/2 teaspoon of whole allspice berries, and 1/2 cup of water. And then you bring this mixture to a boil over high heat. Then you strain and discard the cinnamon stick and the allspice berries, and the drink is ready to be served. And this is a very simple and warming drink, and really great for this time of the year. Now, for all of you who are hot chocolate lovers, I have a wonderful recipe. The recipe is called Spiced Hot Dark Chocolate. And according to Ayurvedic medicine, warming spices such as cinnamon and cardamom can help boost energy. Plus, the dark chocolate is loaded with antioxidants. And for this recipe, you combine 1 quart of whole milk, preferably organic, 6 ounces of dark chocolate that has been coarsely chopped, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cardamom, and 1/8 teaspoon of ground cayenne pepper. And all you do is you whisk this mixture over medium to low heat until the chocolate has melted completely and the mixture is steaming hot for about 5 minutes. And then it is ready to be served. So this wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for listening this evening. I hope you enjoyed the information as well as the music. And for a list of my services, I invite you to visit my website at elywellness.com or stop by at the Evergreen Cottage and Evergreen Spa and Wellness Center to pick up a pamphlet. I also invite you to stop by and check out the Whole Foods Pantry and stock up on organic produce, meats, dairy, and natural foods to keep yourself and your family in good health. Or if you happen to be in the Virginia area, I encourage you to visit the Natural Harvest Food Co-op, who, by the way, is co-sponsoring the show. Remember, let food be your medicine. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you will join me again next Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock right here on WELY. Be well and take care.